Hi, this is Lorenzo Elin on The Production Specialist, a podcast series of personal accounts from individuals and companies in emerging and frontier production industries. In today's episode, we have Connie Grayson, a reputable hair and contact lens specialist from big name movies to funny Super Bowl commercials. She is currently contracted at Legacy FX, working on The Mandalorian Season 2, and has worked on movies such as Pirates of the Caribbean and The Avengers. As a teen, Connie had always been interested in the behind-the-scenes of productions, notably Michael Jackson's Thriller music video. However, it never occurred to her that this was a career path until her days in college. Connie, welcome to the show.
I never thought I would work in this industry. When I was a teenager and the Michael Jackson Thriller video came on, I was in, I think, junior high school. And I used to run home from school to see not only just the Thriller video, but they always played a behind the scenes of the making of Thriller on MTV. And so I would run home, and I think they started it at like 3:30 or something. And so I would run home from school so I could make sure that I could see it on MTV. And then when I was in college, I was taking a sociology class that was conflicting with my work schedule. And I was living on my own at the time. And I just thought, I need to take something that I won't get an F in. And so I dropped my sociology class, and I just thought, I'll just take something fun, it'll be easy, no big deal, just kind of a breezy class, something fun. And I looked through the catalog and I hit the drama department, and there was an acting class, a costume class, and a makeup class. And I thought, oh God, theatrical makeup. And I immediately thought of the Michael Jackson video, and I'm like, oh, that's the coolest thing in the whole world. I want to take a makeup class just for fun. That's perfect.
After finding her newly found interest, she began to be praised for her work by her teachers and was reluctant to learn that this was certainly a career path.
And I took it, and that was it. I mean, from that point on, it was, oh God, I love doing this. You know, let me volunteer my time in the productions behind the scenes at the college. And then my teachers were encouraging me and saying, you know, you're really good at this and you are enjoying it. So I said, well, is this a career? And they said, well, yeah, of course it's a career. You know, but there's makeup people in Hollywood and theater. And because I was so new and green and really enjoyed working in theater, I thought, well, I want to have a career in theater.
It wasn't even about what was happening on stage that kept her interested. It was all the things behind the scenes that kept her obsessed, absorbed, and wanting more.
Because I just enjoyed the whole atmosphere of being behind the scenes. I enjoyed working with the costumers and working with the actors and working with the stagehands and just being a whole part of a production, because there's a whole other world going on behind a stage show than there is on stage. And I've always said that would be such a great TV show. I don't understand why no one has done that, because you could really change out the actors and just keep the crew as your main cast, you know. But it's just a lot of fun because there's so many accidents that happen and problems and funny conversations and people fighting and breaking up and, you know, mustaches falling off. And it's really a lot of fun.
And so she pursued it. Diving headfirst, she began volunteering her time and making contacts.
I started off volunteering my time in San Diego at the local community theaters. So I started off at the Starlight Theater, and that was all musical theater down in Belleville Park in San Diego. And so I went to Starlight, and then I worked at the Old Globe and San Diego Rep and all the theaters in San Diego.
However, this wasn't a full-time job, and she quickly learned in order to transition to full-time, she needed to learn
wig making, because in theater, actors do their own makeup unless it's like a specialty thing. Or if you pursue opera, you can work full-time in opera as a makeup artist as well as a wig person. But I wanted to work full-time, so I had to become a wig maker, and that's how I became a wig maker. And it was one of those things that it's such a specialty. There was, I think, 2 or 3 wig making schools in the country that taught wig making. And one of them was in San Diego at the Old Globe. And I kept calling and calling, and the wig master just wouldn't take my calls. And then finally he said, well, I'm going to be closing down the school, but if you can somehow learn how to tie, then maybe I can bring you on as an intern. And so I actually ended up going to La Jolla Playhouse, and I found the wig master there. And he said, okay, I'll teach you how to tie, but that's all I'm going to teach you how to do. Then you got to practice learning how to do that all summer, and then you're on your own. I'm like, okay. So I did that, and I ended up working at a children's theater in Pennsylvania as the hair and makeup person. I practiced all summer making all these really crappy mustaches and beards and eyebrows and all the stuff for these kids to do at their summer camp. It helped me get the rhythm of learning how to tie hair.
After having traveled to Pennsylvania for the summer, she moved back to San Diego to study at the Old Globe Theater, where they taught her how to make wigs. but her mentor and wig master was diagnosed with AIDS, leaving Connie to be his last intern. As the years went by, fine-tuning her skill with the Boston Ballet and the Stratford Festival in Canada, she was ready and confident to take on Los Angeles.
I thought if I ever moved to Los Angeles and get in the film industry, I wanted to have confidence. By that point, after 8 years of doing theater, and I knew what I was doing.
But before she moved from Canada,
I sent a bunch of resumes out to all the different effects studios. And I got their addresses from the back of some makeup effects magazine or book or something that I had. And I had all these different studios, and I just sent my resumes out. And one of them was to Stan Winston Studio. At the time, they were finishing up filming Jurassic Park, and they said, okay, well, we have a project coming up that's gonna have hair. And so I ended up getting here in Los Angeles in January of 94. I was working at the LA Opera for about 2 weeks, and that's when the big Northridge earthquake hit. And so everything kind of shut down for a little bit. And then I started my job over at Stan Winston's, and my first movie was Congo. And then my second movie was Tank Girl. And because I started at Stan's in 1994, that year he got the Oscar for Jurassic Park. So because of that, my career was just, you know, it was up really high. So I could really work anywhere.
Connie's dream was shortly fulfilled when she interviewed for a position with Rick Baker, the person who had done all the makeup for Michael Jackson's videos, including Thriller, the music video that planted the seed.
I was so nervous to meet him. I had my portfolio in front of me, and there was one picture that I put in the back of my portfolio. And I had done this hair piece for an actor as a favor, and I had used his own hair. And it didn't really blend off as well as I liked, and he wouldn't pay for more hair for me to blend it off better. And so I threw it in the back of my portfolio, and I sat down with Rick, and he's going through my portfolio, and I'm just almost shaking because I'm sitting there finally with the god, Rick Baker. And sure enough, he gets to the back of my portfolio and he finds that picture. He's like, what happened here? I'm like, oh God. So he saw the one mistake that I had in my portfolio, which tells you how good his eye was.
Throughout her work with Rick Baker, she met Christina Patterson, an on-set contact lens tech. They became close friends, and Christina offered to teach Connie the ropes of contact lenses. Connie, without hesitation, said yes, giving her one more tool in her belt and giving her more job security through the dry season.
She and I became really good friends. She's actually a really, really good friend of mine. And she was working with us in the hair department at Rick's. And she and I had had a conversation talking about my history. And she said, hey, you know, I need another person to be an on-set lens tech. Is that something you'd be interested in? And I was thinking, well, sure, why not? Because there's time, you know, you get highs and lows. So I thought, well, maybe that could be like a little filler job, you know, in between, and help her out at the same time. And I started working on set, and then that ended up being great for me because the building part of doing hair is usually pre-production, and then contact lenses is usually once the production starts filming. So as it's turned out, when I was working more as a freelance wig maker, I could go in and start the project and then sometimes go with the project to go do the contacts. So it kept me busier year round.
Although working year round and in multiple stages of production can have grueling hours. Unions also oversee production and negotiate the rates and hours a person works on set. But Connie had no interest in continuing to pursue the on-set life.
I had thought, well, okay, well, maybe I'll stop working in the studios and be an on-set hairdresser and be in the union and make more money and do all that sort of stuff. But when I finished hairdressing school, I ended up starting off as a contact lens tech. And as a lens tech, I was seeing that the amount of time that the on-set people were coming in and leaving. And as an on-set lens tech, I was the last one to arrive and the first one to leave. And I was working 12 to 14 hour days, which tells you how long the hair and makeup people work. After going through a few years of doing lens tech work, I just kind of decided, you know what? I want to see John because my husband, John, works 6 to 2 every day, Monday to Friday. And when I was doing that, we were like ships passing in the night. We literally weren't seeing each other at all. And it was taking a toll on my marriage. And so for me, it was more important to spend time with him and then try and do you know, whatever hours I could do as an independent wig maker and as a lens tech and go from there. And then I got in at Legacy almost 10 years ago. I've been there 9 years now, and it's 8 to 5 Monday to Friday.
Wigs and hair are only one part of the equation when creating a character. Here are some of the other people she works closely with in pre-production. And as a side note, her husband John works as an animatronic supervisor at the Jim Henson Creature Shop.
Well, you kind of work with everybody in the shop. You work with the designers, you work with the actors, you work with the foam running or silicone running people, you work with the mold makers, you work with the painters, just about everybody except maybe animatronics. You wouldn't work with animatronics.
Now that she is contracted by Legacy Effects and a non-union member, she hardly visits production sets. But when she does, it can lead to uncomfortable moments and some slight nerves.
Because one, I'm not union, so I don't do hair on set. So I think that that's one, might be the only time I ever really feel really nervous is if I have to go to set. So if it's a hair effect, meaning like a makeup effect, then I can go to set and help apply it.
Here's a good example. You have probably seen the hit ad from Quicken Loans with Jason Momoa from the 2020 Super Bowl. And of course you guessed it, she did all that hair.
So that was another one that I worked through the Christmas holidays, and I think I had 2 weeks to get those two wigs together. And one of them was the balding wig, and then the other one was to match his hair. So they had to do a bald cap on him and then do the balding wig and then, or the thinning wig, and then do the wig on. So that was a hard one. And then on top of it all, I didn't meet him until the day of filming. So I didn't know if my wigs were even going to fit. I mean, we never did a live cast of him. We did a scan of him where we digitally scanned his head, and then we made a fake head for that. So I made my wigs based off of the scan. So I was just praying that they would fit, and they did.
Even though she had a rough time on set, she did have nice things to say about working personally with Jason.
Studio made a bunch of bald caps to put on top of his head, and then the wigs on top of that, and none of the bald caps fit. And he has a gigantic head.
Well, kinda. Sorry, Jason. Well, at least hard work results in esteemed project credit, right? We'll take a look at Connie's IMDb, and you will shockingly see many unaccredited projects.
I believe names cost money, so I don't know if sometimes it's just too many names on a crew or they have more digital people and they decide to go that way. I don't know, but you can't get in this industry thinking, okay, I'm doing it for the credits because I want people to see my name in credits. You can't do it. That's, you're going to be disappointed. You know what I mean? And there, you don't understand the politics of why your name is put in or not. They may say, well, this person may not have worked as many hours as this person, so we're just going to give it to the people who work the most hours on set. So they may just give credits to the people who just go to set, you know, the union people. I mean, we're on season 2 of Mandalorian, and I still don't have a credit. And I've made at least 4 creatures on that show, and I still don't have credit.
It's an unfortunate situation, but it isn't the end of the world. Unless we're talking about the rise of CGI or computer-generated imagery. Could this be the collapse to practical and special effects as we know it?
When I first started in makeup effects, I remember I was at Stan's and we were working on Congo. And I remember everyone, CGI was all really starting then, and they were really beginning to incorporate it in. And Jurassic Park had just come out, but they had done practical effects with digital effects on that film. So it was a really beautiful marriage of both. And I think that's why that movie still holds up. Is because it's got the real life element with the, you know, the digital effects complementing it. And then we went through a number of years where creature effects kind of slowed down and went off the radar for a while, and digital effects came in and kind of took over for a little bit, but it wasn't that great. The actors get something real to work off of. And there's the, of course, just the real life element of it being there. I mean, look at Baby Yoda, for example. That's a puppet. It's being operated by people. But then there's some parts of, Mandalorian or something, that where you're seeing movements for on makeups and that sort of thing. And it just marries in nicely with the makeups. So
Connie makes a great point. There are still many directors and writers who lean towards practical effects, notably Christopher Nolan. But depending on the artistic vision of the director or writer, we can never be sure of what to expect, especially with the younger generation and the obsession with better graphics.
But like that movie, Alita, I had trouble watching it because to me, it just looks like I'm watching a video game. But I think if they had done a little bit more practical with that, I would have been able to escape more into the world.
Practical effects will undoubtedly be around for a long time, making it easier for actors to interact with their surroundings that allow creation of scenes to be more realistic and do what CGI cannot. However, like Connie said, they should complement each other. CGI and practical effects are both tools, and they are only as good as the professionals using them. And there you have it, our first episode in our bi-weekly podcast. Thanks to Connie Grayson for being on the show. The Production Specialist is hosted by Black Dagger Audio, an audio production and post-production studio based in Dubai, UAE, specializing in custom sound design, original music, VO, and dialogue editing. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, there are three things that will help benefit this show. First is to share this with someone who has interest in the production industry. Second is to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. And third is to support us on Patreon at patreon.com/productionspecialist. We have member-exclusive benefits, such as behind-the-scenes, bloopers, sitting in on live interviews, early access to episodes, and much more. And that is it. Thank you so much. See you next time.